All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Monday, June 26, 2023. Thank you for joining me, Mike Adams here. We got a special guest coming up today, Dr. Mark Sherwood. I think that's the interview we're going to be running here. Awesome interview with an amazing individual. Watch for that after the discussion here. The main topic today, though, is about the future of money, and it's actually a war between centralization or central control of your money versus decentralization, or you having control over your money. And there are so many huge developments with BlackRock and Fidelity now moving into crypto and BlackRock launching a Bitcoin ETF. What's clear to me is that we're now seeing big banks move in to seize control of the crypto ecosystems as much as they can. And so the real war in the crypto space is going to be between those who want to go along with the establishment banksters who want to use crypto as a surveillance grid and a control grid and have, you know, onerous oversight and monitoring of everything you do, versus those who want to stick to the original vision of Satoshi, which is decentralization. Holding your own coins in your own wallets, self-custody, you have your keys, you have your coins, you trade peer-to-peer with others. You might use decentralized exchanges, DEXs, for example, but you don't hand your power over to centralized systems of control. That's the original vision of crypto, and that vision has been somewhat lost, by the way, in ways that I'll talk about here. So this is the war that's shaping up for the future of money. Now, all money is going to be digital, or nearly all, in the near future. That's key. I mean, it's inevitable. They're moving towards, of course, central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, digital dollars, you know, digital yen, digital euros, whatever. So all money is going to be digital, other than what you trade locally in terms of physical gold and silver, which has its place, by the way, don't get me wrong. But for almost all transactions, almost all money will be digital. I mean, it's almost all digital now. I mean, you think about your bank account and what you do with your money and credit cards and ACH and wire transfers. It's all digital. So it's going to stay nearly all digital. It's just that you're going to lose your autonomy. You're going to lose your privacy and your self-control if the big banksters win in this massive war. And of course, they can print money. So they can buy off everybody. They can build systems to take over. They can even, in fact, one of my predictions of what's going to happen is that once BlackRock launches an ETF for Bitcoin, at some point, this won't be right away, but at some point, they will probably try to take over Bitcoin with a hard fork. It'll be a fork that most likely will attempt to shift Bitcoin to a proof-of-stake model instead of a proof-of-work model. And this will please the environmentalists, by the way. Oh, and as a side note, did you know that Republicans tend to support crypto far more than Democrats? So Democrats tend to be very anti-crypto. Democrats hate Bitcoin, for the most part. Democrats don't like privacy. They don't like you to have private digital money or your own autonomy over your money. Democrats love a surveillance state. They love the government having control over your money or limiting your purchasing power, having programmable money, you know, central bank digital currencies. That's Democrats. Republicans tend to appreciate things like Bitcoin, and they want to have their own private money, their own digital money, their own wallets, their own control, decentralized exchanges, and so on. That's how it lines up for the most part. Well, it's fascinating to me that so many people in the crypto space voted for Joe Biden. And now, boy, are they paying for that with the Gary Gensler war on crypto under the Biden administration. So if Trump had been in the White House, we wouldn't be having this war, I don't think. I mean, maybe you disagree with me, but I don't think we'd be having this kind of total war against crypto. Now, interestingly, RFK Jr. is pro-crypto, pro-Bitcoin. And he's a Democrat, so he's kind of breaking the mold of the Democrats. But think about Senator Elizabeth Warren. She hates crypto. She wants to destroy crypto. that's, you know, that's one of her priorities. And she has the anti-crypto war underway. She wants to destroy every project that she can't control, you know, because she's wicked and evil and so on. So as you think about 2024 and the election, if you want to have private money, you need to probably tend to vote Republican. And especially since Republicans also tend to support the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, and then, you know, your right to private money, your right to control your own money, your own wallets, and things like that. So the battle lines have been drawn, and it's shaping up to be quite a distinct face-off between the totalitarian Democrats and the mostly pro-freedom conservatives. Then again, there's a bunch of rhinos mixed in with that who are globalists. So it's not, I guess it's not so clear cut, but a conservative philosophy is definitely pro-private money. But let's get back to the consolidation that is underway. So with Fidelity now, of course, one of the largest investment front groups, basically a front for Wall Street that lets you invest your pensions and your funds and whatever, yeah, Fidelity.com, they now allow you to hold Bitcoin, but not really. You're actually holding Bitcoin IOUs. So just as on Fidelity, you can invest in stocks, you can invest in bonds, you can invest in ETFs, and you can also invest in now Bitcoin. But Fidelity holds the Bitcoin for you. And all you really see is on the screen, oh, I have this much Bitcoin. But do you really? No, you don't. Because you can't issue a payment in Bitcoin out of your Fidelity account. It's not a Bitcoin wallet. And you don't have custody of the Bitcoin. You don't have the keys. So you're trusting Fidelity. And how do you even know that they're holding the Bitcoin that they claim that they sold you? You see? So maybe you're a billionaire and you buy, you know, I don't know, 10,000 Bitcoins or something. How do you know they even have it there? And what happens when one day you want to sell those Bitcoins on Fidelity.com and then it turns out Fidelity doesn't really have them? Oh, huh. Where have we seen that happen before? FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, and a bunch of other places. Silicon Valley Bank, people trying to take their money out and they're like, oh, what money? We don't have it. In fact, there have been a lot of shenanigans going on with Binance and centralized exchanges in general. I've seen some very strong evidence that some of these exchanges were issuing basically IOUs for BTC or other coins like Monero. Like some people would deposit Monero with Binance and then other people would maybe swap Bitcoin for Monero. And so they would take Monero off the exchange. But then it looks to me like Binance didn't really keep enough Monero around to meet the demand of the first person who deposited in case they wanted to withdraw 100% of their Monero. So I think there's some shenanigans, shell games going on inside Binance, and who knows what's going on in Coinbase. I've never really trusted those centralized exchanges like that. And in fact, I think the centralized exchanges have been part of the problem. And I think that people who use centralized exchanges are taking a great risk and they're only contributing to the problem of centralized control over their money. And this is why I'm a fan of decentralized exchanges, or DEXs as they're called, where you can trade one coin for another coin without the exchange holding custody of your coin. And there are a lot of DEXs, as they are called. And I don't want to give out any specific names yet right now because I want to do more testing and more due diligence on them before I possibly recommend one or more than one. But there are swap services that are really easy to use. You don't even need accounts to use the swap services. And on swap services, you say, like, I'll send you, you know, 0.01 Bitcoin, and then you send me how many Monero or Litecoin or whatever. And that swap takes place over half an hour or an hour, and then you get the coin sent to you. and you don't need an account. You don't have to enter a name or an email or anything like that. These are very, very useful. And this is what a lot of people will end up using as the centralized exchanges get gutted by the SEC, because the SEC is working for the big banks. I mean, who do you think Gary Gensler is working for? He's working for JP Morgan. You know, he's working for the banksters, clearly. And he's wielding the power of the SEC as a weapon against the cryptocurrency ecosystem to try to bring it down. Their first target is the centralized exchanges, Binance and Coinbase. But later on, they will probably target more things. And interestingly, one of the effects of their attack of the centralized exchanges is it's forcing people to get off those exchanges, which is something they should be doing anyway. So Gary Gensler is having the effect of causing massive decentralization of the cryptocurrency community, which is actually a good thing. It's an unintended benefit of Gary Gensler's attack on Binance. Frankly, we don't need Binance in order to use crypto payment systems. We don't need Coinbase. We don't need Gemini. We don't need any of those in order to trade crypto with each other. As a pure peer-to-peer cryptocurrency, we can do that locally, or we can just decide to accept coins as payment or coins as financial tips. Like I've done, I've implemented now, as you may have heard, on Brighteon.com. You can now, as a content creator on that platform, you can enter your Monero wallet receive address in the dashboard, and then there's a Monero QR code that pops up anytime somebody wants to give you a tip because they like your video. So they just click a tip crypto button, and then they can send you a crypto tip, and you get that, you know, it's Monero. And we're going to support other coins as well. Monero is just one of the first. So in effect, the skill set that you are going to need to master in all of this in order to survive this great power grab that's coming, it's a crypto power grab, is that you're going to need to learn how to use, how to acquire crypto, how to use crypto swaps, how to hold privacy coins. And I'm going to be interviewing the founders of many different privacy coin projects coming up on my new show, Decentralized.tv. You're going to need to know how to use decentralized exchanges, atomic swaps, or, you know, chain-to-chain swaps. You're going to need this basic skill set, which is pretty easy, by the way. It's easier than using Excel. If you know how to use Excel, you can do this. It might be foreign-seeming to you, but it's actually not that difficult. But the bottom line is, these are the skills you're going to need to be able to maintain control over your own money and not have your assets totally surveilled, controlled, and ultimately confiscated by the powers that be. Because that's their end game, right? They want to control your money. They want to be able to steal it at any time, just take it, confiscate it. They want the backdoor keys to your crypto wallet. And they don't care if it's CBDCs or sort of government-run Bitcoin. You know, the BlackRock fork of Bitcoin. Call it like BRBTC or something. BlackRock Bitcoin. That'll be a surveillance coin. And the reason, in my prediction, they'll shift that to proof of stake instead of proof of work is because under proof of stake systems, which is what Ethereum shifted to, and I personally think that's disastrous. Under proof of stake systems, the rich get richer. Whoever holds the most coins has the most power over the future of that project. And so whoever can just buy the most coins and hold them has control. Well, who loves that system? Oh, the banksters love that system. You know, the wealthy elite love that system. Proof of work is much more distributed. Proof of work systems, which do use more electricity, but proof of work systems that can use everyday computers to run nodes or to engage in mining without allowing ASICs to take over the system, you know, customize specialty computers that are used on Bitcoin for the most part, by the way. But there are proof of work algorithms that are more decentralized, such as ProgPow, PROG, proof of work, ProgPow. And that's why several different projects, like even Firo, is moving over to ProgPow, because it is more decentralized and it's harder for big money people to come in and take that whole thing over. Okay, so proof of work, actually, it's fascinating to me how much the original Bitcoin vision got correct, but I'm only seeing that in retrospect now. You know, who the Satoshi Nakamoto vision got a lot of things right. It wasn't perfect, but it was pretty darn amazing, even in retrospect. And one of those was proof of work. So proof of work actually has a built-in resistance against massive takeovers by central banks, because central banks can always print endless fiat currency, and they can use that fiat currency to buy a massive stake in crypto, and they can dominate proof of stake projects. This is why I think ultimately they're going to try to push Bitcoin into a proof of stake hard fork. And again, the environmentalists will demand that they do that, because proof of work burns a lot of electricity, especially on Bitcoin. And it's true, it does. But if Bitcoin gets hard forked into a proof of stake system, you know, run by BlackRock, then that means everybody's going to have to make a choice. Do you go with the consolidated centralized control system, proof of stake, BlackRock Bitcoin, or do you stick with the original Bitcoin, which is more decentralized, more independent, more, you know, autonomous, more sovereign? And that's indicative of the entire war that we're talking about here. But understand that where this is going is that BlackRock, starting with this ETF, which will no doubt be approved by the SEC, they will attract a lot of institutional investors. There'll be a lot of money, no doubt, pouring into that ETF. We will never know if the paper Bitcoins that BlackRock is selling can ever be backed up by actual Bitcoin, by the way. It's just like how they paper over the gold and silver markets. So it could be a giant scam, could be a giant rug pull. But nevertheless, a lot of institutional investors will jump in at that point. Bitcoin, I believe, will rise substantially after the approval of the BlackRock ETF. But at some point after that, maybe a year later, who knows, BlackRock will say, well, hey, we want to run Bitcoin now, and we have the biggest holders of it through our fund, and now we want to hard fork it to be better, you know, for your security, for environmental reasons, for whatever, you know, to stop fraudsters, and we need to have more security measures, more surveillance, more, you know, limits on what you can do with it, because, of course, we can't have criminals using it. You know, although, of course, as people have pointed out, anytime somebody says, oh, why do you promote privacy coins? Criminals use privacy coins. And, you know, the answer, like, yeah, criminals use blenders, too. Did you know criminals can make smoothies? Criminals eat ice cream. Did you know criminals buy lawnmowers? Should we stop selling all lawnmowers because some criminals bought lawnmowers? I mean, it's insane. You know, criminals take ibuprofen. We should ban ibuprofen so that criminals can't stop their pain and inflammation. You know, it's just an insane argument. And by the way, criminals use cash. In fact, the biggest criminals in the world carry out their crimes against humanity using the U.S. dollar. And some of those biggest criminals in the world are the central banks themselves and the governments, with all the bribery and the kickbacks and the fraud and all this money for Ukraine that isn't really for Ukraine. It's actually kickbacks to the weapons contract manufacturers and the family members of the senators and the State Department employees who gave it the thumbs up. It's all a bunch of kickbacks and fraud and crime. And that's all done in dollars. So don't tell me that, oh, privacy coins. No, more crimes have been carried out under the power and the cover of the dollar than any other currency in the history of our world, including the Roman Empire or even Nazi Germany, for God's sake. So, you know, there's no currency that's been used or tied to more evil than the dollar itself. Anyway, they're probably going to push for a proof of stake switch at some point, and then that could clobber the original Bitcoin, which I think would be the goal of the centralized systems, is to destroy the original Bitcoin and kind of consume it. take it over, control it. Basically, BlackRock ETFs are a giant Trojan horse, is what it looks like. To go in and make it look like, oh, we're going to prop up Bitcoin, but actually they're in there to take over Bitcoin and trash the original idea. All right, that's my take on it. That's where I think this is going. By the way, my new show called Decentralize.tv, that's also the website, is launching this Wednesday on Brighteon.tv. And on that show with my co-host, Todd Pittner, we talk about these issues and much more. And on every show, we interview somebody interesting, somebody who's talking about decentralization. And we have coming up quite a few founders and leaders of fascinating crypto projects and other tech projects, decentralization, privacy-oriented wallets, lots of solutions that I think you'll find really practical and very interesting. That's all coming up. So one episode per week to begin, but if it's a popular show, I think it will be, we'll go to two episodes a week and we'll see what happens from there. Anyway, I'll keep you posted, but the first episode comes out this Wednesday. I don't know the time yet. Wednesday, maybe 5 p.m., 6 p.m., something like that, on Brighteon.tv. And the website for this new show is decentralize.tv. It, like the verb. It's like a command. Decentralize. Like telling you to decentralize. Okay. Now let's shift gears here for a second and talk about the reality, and it's kind of a warning that goes with this. The reality that every system of money has elements of fraud or scams in it. All of them. Especially the dollar. So the dollar is a scam. The entire Wall Street centralized bank system, Federal Reserve, all of it, it really is a giant debt-based Ponzi scheme scam. It's a giant rug pull. It's just a, you know, a century-plus rug pull. You realize the dollar's lost over 99% of its value since the creation of the Federal Reserve. I mean, there's a rug pull for you right there. Boom, 99%. It just took a long time. It's going to go to zero at one point. It may be all of a sudden. We just don't know exactly what that's going to look like. But that's a giant rug pull. Now, you might think, well, gold and silver are honest, right? I mean, easy to trust because it's a physical element. But if you look at the history of gold and silver as money, of course, you look at Roman times and so on, you find that they were trying to, people were shaving off the edges of the gold and silver coins, which is why you have the serrated edges of coins today, because that's actually an anti-shaving detection system. If people shave off the rim of the coin, then the serrations would be gone and you would notice. That's what that's there for, by the way, in case you're wondering. But of course, people tried to take a little bit of silver off each coin and pocket that. Of course they did. Throughout the whole history of money, it's been a history of attempted scams and crimes and counterfeiting and rug pulls and the whole deal. And the same thing is absolutely true in crypto. There are crypto projects that are intentional rug pulls. There are also crypto projects that are inadvertent failures. You know, some of them are formed by people who want them to succeed, and then for whatever reason, they do not succeed and projects collapse and so on. Sometimes there are forks. Most forks fail in almost every case, but sometimes they succeed, and then the original project is kind of tends to fade away. I want to encourage you to think as a skeptic, especially right now as the entire ecosystem of money is changing dramatically. Over the next few years, it's going to be a wild ride. We're looking at being forced into CBDCs. We're looking at BlackRock launching the Bitcoin ETF. We're seeing central banks trying to take over crypto, but also the rise of privacy coins that can't be surveilled. A lot of the technology is early stage. It's going to take years for it to mature. I've been looking at a lot of privacy coins, and they're promising in many cases, but some of them have major technical glitches that are showstoppers, and some of them have organizational or leadership problems that are showstoppers. So it's going to take a number of years for various projects to really get off the ground and prove themselves and so on. But I think what you need to keep in mind in all of this is that preserving your assets right now is the name of the game, in my opinion. It's not about FOMO or buy low, sell high, or even gaining profits or speculation. It's about how do we not lose the purchasing power of the money that you've earned and probably paid taxes on and already put in some kind of a savings account or something. How do you not lose the value of that money? Because if you hold it in a bank in dollars, you're losing money every day. You're losing purchasing power. So how do you not lose? And I know that one option is buy gold and silver and sit on it. Historically, that has absolutely proven to beat inflation and to hold value. And that's one of the best things about gold and silver. And that's why I have recommended it for so many years. But what if you need money that you can use easily? You need to engage in transactions. You need to pay bills. You need to pay salaries. You need to buy inventory like we do at our store. You know, we're buying millions of dollars of inventory all the time. And having to, you know, handle e-commerce transactions and pay vendors and pay transportation and you know, hire our lab personnel and and pay for lab equipment, which is never cheap. Crazy. The last quote I looked at for an instrument was $429,000, I think it was. And I was like, no, I don't have an extra $400K sitting around for an instrument. Let's find a, you know, for that instrument, let's find a better option. But the point is, if you need some liquid cash, you're going to have some digital form of money. And that's where it's hard to not lose it. Again, if you hold it in a bank, you're losing. If you go into a CBDC, you're losing because you're losing control. They might seize it from you. They might say you don't have a social score that they like because you didn't worship, you know, transgender parade week or whatever. If you hold it in crypto, right? There's risks in crypto. Some projects may do very well. Other projects may fail. Some projects might be attacked by the regulators, while other projects may be embraced by regulators. So in the digital money space, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to not lose money, no matter what form you hold it in. Now, let's talk about what I think the regulators are going to go after. I believe that the regulators will specifically try to target privacy coins, even though I'm a strong advocate of privacy coins. I think privacy coins will demonstrate their value, though, in terms of being censorship resilient or resistant, censorship proof, but also confiscation proof. So privacy-oriented crypto, which again, on my new show with Todd Pittner, we're going to be covering all these coins and all these projects in the months ahead. So you're going to learn about all of it. It's actually going to be a really fun show to do. You're going to learn also the value of private money, which is money that no one really knows you have it. No one knows how you're spending it. No one knows who you've sent it to or who you received it from. No one can look up your wallet and see your activity. Now, Bitcoin is, of course, fully transparent. Your Bitcoin wallet address is kind of like giving out your Twitter handle. Like anybody can go on a Twitter and see all the tweets you ever did all the way back to the beginning when you were crazy and you tweeted without thinking about it. Yeah, that's going to haunt a lot of young people today as they try to get jobs in the future, but whatever. Bitcoin is like publishing the keys to your wallet almost. Well, not exactly the keys, but at least a read-only view of your wallet. And that's crazy. Why would you want everybody to see all the expenditures you've ever made or how much money you have or what are your monthly outflows of money or who you sent money to or whatever? That's crazy. So only privacy coins protect your privacy where nobody can see that stuff. And since a lot of people don't know about the importance of privacy coins, and by the way, Monero is one of them. That's the first one we've integrated on Brighteon. Monero's actually, it's the best known privacy coin. It may not be the most modern tech, let's say, but it is the most successful, most widely adopted easiest on-ramps and off-ramps and so on privacy coin in existence. That's Monero. But when most people buy Bitcoin, they think they're buying something that has the properties of Monero. They think it's private, but it isn't. And I heard a commenter say this. They said, Monero is what noobs thought they bought when they bought Bitcoin. But Bitcoin isn't private. Monero actually is private. Everybody's heard of Bitcoin, but a lot of people haven't heard of Monero or other privacy coins. But I think the future of control over your money is going to rest in the privacy coins. And they will have the highest, in my opinion, the highest utility value, because there is inherent value in having the right to human dignity, human privacy of your money. Don't you have the right to keep it private? That has inherent value. And that's why I believe that even though privacy coins are going to be attacked by regulators, I think privacy coins will continue to express inherent, intrinsic, you could say, value because of their privacy nature. And thus, privacy coins that have good technology, I don't think they will ever go to zero. They will always have value. Now, of course, they can fluctuate a lot. And if countries like the United States or the EU, which is working on all these crypto regulations, let's say the EU says, well, we're going to outlaw anybody even using Monero or privacy coins. Well, is that even possible to outlaw somebody from spending their money to buy what? What are they buying? A record on a distributed ledger? I mean, how could that even be made illegal? I mean, such decisions would be, of course, immediately challenged in the courts and so on. But suppose the governments declared it to be illegal. Okay, they declare it illegal. Does that make the value of privacy coins go to zero? Not in my view, no. Why? Because the government can outlaw it, but they can't tell how much you have or how you're using it. Hence, people would still use it without fear of being prosecuted, because nobody knows that you're using it. and unless the government, you know, catches you in the act of sending Monero, like on video or something, or gets you to sign a confession or something, how would they even know that you're doing it? There's no way for them to know. Especially if you encrypt your operating system or you encrypt your mobile device or whatever. But, you know, if you download Monero wallets and install them and you use simple passwords like, you know, ABC123, and then, of course, people are going to, they're going to hack that and get into your wallet and they're going to see how many coins you have. Oh, you've got 57 XMR. Okay. You're going to jail, buddy, for 20 years for having digital money that we don't approve of. You know, that kind of thing. This particular individual needs to be branded, needs to be scannable. That's a line from Idiocracy, or a paraphrase of, this particular individual is unscannable, which freaks out everybody in the hospital. Remember that scene in Idiocracy? It's always worth watching again. But anyway, the point is, even if they try to outlaw Monero or other privacy coins, how are they going to prove that you even hold them? How are they going to prove that you've used them, or that you receive them, or that you transfer them? There's no way mathematically for them to prove that, you see. So privacy coins will have value, and I think they will be, in fact, the coins that really, you know, stick it to the man. The privacy coins are going to be like the double bird, you know, the double flip off to the government to say, you know, bleep you, we're not going to go into your CBDC surveillance grid matrix money system. We're going to control our own money. We're going to use privacy coins. That's what people are going to do. And then, you know, the people who aren't familiar with privacy coins, they'll just hold Bitcoin and they'll end up being under the control of BlackRock, which will be, it's just the same as just having a bank account, I guess, in that scenario, sadly. I mean, I hope that's not where Bitcoin goes, but I'm afraid it will. I think a lot of Bitcoiners, by the way, are going to end up moving to privacy coins. There's also a possibility that the Bitcoin project, you know, the main Bitcoin, BTC, could at some point, although this is a Herculean project, it could at some point fork into a, or maybe it can embrace some privacy properties. I'm not even sure how that would happen. I mean, it's a technical nightmare. It might never work. I don't know. It might have to be a hard, well, it would have to be a hard fork, and that might bomb. So who knows? I mean, maybe some of you know better than I, but you know, Bitcoin can be upgraded. That's my point. It doesn't have to stay fully transparent. It could embrace more privacy-oriented features over time if the Bitcoin community thought that that was important. There are also other efforts, you know, utilities and wallets like the Samurai wallet and so on that can do CoinJoin slowly. It's painstakingly slow to kind of mix up your Bitcoins and increase fungibility by essentially eliminating traces of what your Bitcoin was used for before it came to you, because Bitcoin has a whole history. You know, it's all fully transparent. So you might have, quote, tainted Bitcoin that the government decides is bad Bitcoin, bad boy, because it was used somewhere else in the past to buy something illegal, you know, like rocket launchers that were sent to Ukraine or something. But those are some of the issues we're going to be dealing with. And that's why privacy coins, again, are so amazing, because privacy coins don't have tainted coins. Every coin in a privacy coin project is a fresh coin with no history that taints it. Whereas Bitcoin, you know, the only fresh coins you get out of Bitcoin are mined Bitcoins. Those are the only Bitcoins that have no history. So if you're a Bitcoin miner, you know that. Those are actually the most premium coins. Those are the best coins, which means, by definition, not all coins have the same value in Bitcoin, which means there's not really fungibility. One BTC does not equal one BTC. They're not the same. They have histories. They have baggage. But privacy coins don't have that baggage. And that's why I'm assessing so many privacy coin projects, and I've invited so many people for interviews, and I've been doing a lot of due diligence myself, a lot of looking and poking and breaking and talking and seeing what works, what doesn't work, talking to various leaders, seeing what leaders I think have good vision versus leaders that are totally radioactive, toxic, and sabotaging everything that they can get their hands on. You know, I've seen it all. And I'm barely even into the community that much, by the way. And, you know, in the crypto space, you're going to find some of the craziest things you've ever seen. And I was watching some videos from, I don't know, it was one of the YouTube channels, a popular crypto YouTube channel. I think it's a Bitcoin channel. And they were saying, yep, only in crypto are you going to find this craziness. And they would give some example of what some big crypto whale, you know, a big holder of Bitcoin, like some crazy thing they decided to do, that only in crypto would people attempt these things. I get it. You know, there are some interesting cats out there, and not all of them are sane. You know, it takes all types of people, but hey, I guess that's humanity anyway, right? There's certainly even a lot of insane people in the banking system. That's for sure. You know, Gary Gensler may be one of them. So I don't know. Maybe having an expectation of sanity in any sector of the economy is maybe an overzealous expectation, but who knows? Bottom line, privacy coins, I think, is where a lot of people are going to end up, as the non-private coins are in many ways consumed or hijacked by the powers that be. This is the scenario that I see playing out over the next few years. There's going to be, look, the America, the European Union, they will not probably outlaw Bitcoin. I don't see them ever outlawing Bitcoin. They're not going to try that. They're just going to try to control it. Why should they outlaw it if they can control it and use it, exploit it, weaponize it, right? That's their goal. And eventually they'll try to go after the DEXs, so you can't swap Bitcoin for other coins without their permission. You know, it'd be like KYC will follow you everywhere you go, through every exchange, through every wallet. Like, there'll be no privacy if the powers that be get their way. And that's why we have to fight like crazy against that system and continue to support each other and our own communities and our own utility with privacy coins like Monero and many others, and encourage other projects to come on board and build more innovative technology. You know, do effective things, build technology that we can use in the real world that has utility, that has inherent value, that has security, that has scalability, you know, fast transaction times, reliable wallets, all these things. They do matter. You know, solid leadership, a vision, and especially leadership that has a lot of ethics and morality. I was listening, in fact, to one of the people tied to the Fero project, which is another privacy coin that uses Lelantis and what else do they use? I think they started out with a zero-knowledge system, not the same as Zcash, but it was a zero-knowledge type of system, and then they added Lelantis on top of it, I believe. I guess I'll find out more later. But this person was talking about how important it is that if you're a fan of Fero, that you do not trash other crypto projects. And I found that to be, it was really a blessing to hear that. Because there's too many projects out there where people, it's a culture of just trashing everything else just to pump your bag, to pump your coin. And I don't think that's healthy for this environment. You know, we shouldn't be at each other's throats in the privacy crypto space. We should actually be embracing each other and learning from each other and maybe borrowing technology from each other. And that's my stance on the new show, Decentralized.tv. That's why I'm inviting and talking to so many people from so many projects, because we want to be inclusive of innovation in this space. And we're not there to attack a certain project or just say that all coins are bad except our coin. You know, I've heard too much of that. It's not really productive. And often it's not true. It just shows a person's, you know, bias. There are a lot of viable projects, and there are very smart innovators that are building new solutions all the time. So I am confident, if you want to know the big picture question here or answer, I am confident that through cryptography, which is asymmetric mathematics, that we, the people of our world, we will be able to find innovative ways to engage in private communications and private transactions of value, and that these privacy projects will continue to outwit the nefarious, corrupt governments and central banks of the world, who will try to borrow from the crypto space for their control grid, but they will find that they don't have as much adoption as they wished. A lot of people will reject the central bank systems because people value privacy. People value autonomy. It's a basic human right. It's human dignity. And many of us, myself and you included, we will never go into a system. We'll never put assets into a system that is a control grid that will monitor and limit your usage of your own money, or they can automatically just close down your account if they don't like what you're doing. Oh, you donated to the wrong political party. Guess what? Oh, your JP Morgan, Fidelity, BlackRock, Bitcoin account. Oh, it just got frozen. Oh, it's all frozen. Good luck. Yeah. If you don't have control over your money, then you don't own it. And this point will become glaringly obvious to more and more people as the governments of the world, Western governments in particular, become more evil, more overzealous, more totalitarian, which is already happening in Canada and Europe and the United States and so on, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, you name it. Even in Taiwan, this will be happening. But if you want freedom, you need to master decentralized money. And so that's why that's the name of my show, Decentralize.tv. The slogan is, by the way, building the infrastructure of human freedom. So watch for my announcement of the first episode that launches Wednesday. And then, on Brighton.tv and on, of course, Decentralize.tv. And I'll be covering a lot more of this, of course, in the weeks and months ahead. And I've already received a lot of feedback from people who are really excited that this is a direction I've decided to take, to look at this. It did become apparent to me that unless we have autonomy over our money, then freedom is impossible. This became readily apparent during COVID, where, you know, think about it, they could shut down your income if you didn't take the jab. They could just fire you. Oh, you're fired. No income for you. Or they could shut down your bank account if you gave money to peaceful protesters, for example. So if you don't have control over your money, you don't have control over your life. You're not a free citizen at all. And hence, medical freedom depends on monetary freedom, if you think about it. Political freedom depends on monetary freedom. Freedom of speech also depends on decentralization, which is why I'm an advocate of decentralized technologies for publishing and content also. And I'll have experts on the show talking about those topics as well. Decentralization is the answer to achieve human freedom and to escape the grip of tyranny that is ever tightening around our necks. Have you noticed? Do you feel more free today than 5 years ago? No, you feel less free. And that's all by design. All right, so we're going to jump into the interview with Mark Sherwood. I think you'll really enjoy that. And if you want to support us, by the way, let me plug our store, healthrangerstore.com. And we're going to be rolling out a payment system where we will be accepting as payment in the store various privacy coins, starting with Monero, by the way, and then adding others pretty quickly after that. So if you want to use your privacy currency to purchase food, and so that the government doesn't know that you bought it, because it's your right to buy food in secret, by the way, then you'll be able to do that in our store, healthrangerstore.com. And you can also purchase with credit cards right now. And you can help support the show and support our network and our platforms and all of that. So we thank you for your support. And we do have the Ranger buckets in stock, certified organic, storable food, lab tested for heavy metals and glyphosate. And much more, E. coli, salmonella, the whole deal. Hundreds of products to choose from, personal health, nutrition, and so on. Check it all out, healthrangerstore.com. We also want to give credit today, before we jump into the interview, to the Satellite Phone Store, and they are sponsoring our new show on decentralization. So the Satellite Phone Store offers, of course, sat phones that are very affordable, but also the BiviStick product, which is a two-way satellite-based text messaging device. Very small, very tiny, shockingly tiny, but lets you text people in emergencies, even when the cell towers are down and the power grid is down. So you can find all that and more at sat123.com. That's sat123.com. And we appreciate them sponsoring our new show as well. All right, so coming up now is the interview with Mark Sherwood, and I think you will find this fascinating. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're joined by a really fascinating first-time guest, Dr. Mark Sherwood, who ran for governor of Oklahoma, and he served on the SWAT team for the city of Tulsa for many years. He's a naturopath, and he works with his wife, Michelle, who's an osteopath. His website is sherwood.tv. I've got it up here. And Dr. Mark Sherwood joins us now to talk about a lot that's going on. Welcome, Mark. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. And I appreciate what you're doing at Brighteon, too. Great job there. And just really honored to be on with you.
Well, thank you so much. We're just doing the same thing that you're doing, trying to get the word out. And you know, just waking people up. But that's let's talk about you and your efforts in those areas. Give us a quick background. I mean, it's an unusual resume. You were a cop, SWAT team, naturopath, now a public educator. What's your focus, or how did you get here?
Yeah, that's a great question. Just very brief background synopsis. Going back many, many years ago, I was once a professional baseball player. I played in the country of Australia, so I had to grow up quick. And then wow. When I came back to the United States, I got cut a few times from teams around here and wasn't quite talented enough to make it to the big leagues. Then I became a police officer, 10 years of which the SWAT team, 24 years total. During my time on the power or on the police department, I served 10 years as well on the power team. We used to travel around with those evangelical ministries, breaking bricks and bending steel and, you know, blowing up hot water bottles and all that stuff. I did that for a decade. After that, towards the end of my career, I decided to go back to school. Contrary to popular belief, I didn't lose my mind. I just wanted to bring, you know, healing into people's lives. So
right.
became a naturopath, and my wife, Dr. Michelle, who's an osteopath and a naturopath, we teamed up together to form the Functional Medical Institute. And since then, we've kind of gotten a little bit of everything. We've written 3 best-selling books. We've produced 5 full-length movies, and we ran for governor in 2022. And our whole mission, Mike, has been to give people information so they can become free from the things that sort of put people in bondage today. You know, big government, big food, big medicine, and just, you know, big propaganda, I call it. It indoctrinates people, and we just want to see people have the information enough to get free.
Yeah, well, amen for that, and thank you for all that you do in that space. Let's jump into a lot more fascinating stuff here. Now, I hope you're okay if I comment on yeah. you, but you look like a person who is physically and spiritually strong. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. I'm very structured, and I give God the glory. I don't back away from that at all. He's made me that way. The greatest teacher in life, Mike, has been the pain I've gone through. You know, we've all been through hard times, but I've been through some really challenging times, and you either get bitter or get better, and let those scars become stars or become scars that drag you down. And you know, God's put that passion in me to be strong. And I do exercise every day, my faith first, my physical body. And then obviously I go out there and I pour into people's lives, because people today, they need to be heard and they need to be healed. And we yeah. have been gifted to do both.
And what do you use in terms of nutrition? Because, you know, people know, like, I have my smoothie every day here. This is yeah. my superfood smoothie that I've been living on for 20 years. What do you do for nutrition to augment everything you just described?
Well, obviously, I eat real food. Obviously, the garbage that we have today in the standard American diet is just, it's pitiful. It's not fit for human consumption, not yeah. one bit of it. Even in some of your books, you've noted that very well. I've got one of your books on my credenza in my office, the one about all the toxins and pollutants in food. And well done on that, by the way. Unfortunately, I don't do that. I won't participate in that. So I do have, you know, a smoothie every day. I'll use greens and reds, powders all the time. I try to keep it organic as best I know how, and try to keep it, you know, heavy metal and toxin pollution free.
Yeah.
Less ingredients as possible. Eat very clean. And when I eat a lot of vegetables and plants. I don't eat a lot of red meat, not because I don't like it, but because it's harder to source unless you know the farmer.
True.
I will eat venison from time to time. I still like to hunt and fish. So I'm pretty much of a pescatarian, I would say, kind of a guy. And, you know, again, very structured in time and everything. And my wife and I value sleep. We work very, very hard, but sleep is underestimated. So I want to put a plug in for sleep where we can regenerate, restore, and rebuild. So
I'm with you.
Very important.
Yeah, yeah. You can't function on 4 hours of sleep a night. That doesn't work for very long. Maybe one night, but not a bunch of them in a row. All right. Let me ask you then about how many years did you serve on the police force in Tulsa?
Yeah, 24 years.
24 years. That's extraordinary. And you were on the SWAT team for a number of those years?
Yeah, for a decade. 10 years of that was on the SWAT team. And, you know, you see things that nobody really ought to see, right?
Yeah.
And you don't get those memories out of your head. And I like to tell people, I understand life because I've seen the breath of life disappear from a human being right in front of my eyes.
Yes.
And when you see something like that, Mike, it really changes your perspective, changes your sense of perception of what is important and what's not. So, you know, my wife and I, we kind of stay in our lane and do our thing and try to get involved where we can. But I realize powerful lessons that I don't have the power to change somebody else. All I have the yeah. power to do is change myself and live the way I'm supposed to live. And hopefully, you know, with God's help, be a good example.
Well, I've talked to people in the past who are these I would say, overzealous optimists, and they've said things like they don't believe there's evil in the world. And I would respond and say, well, you need to be a cop for one weekend.
Yeah, no question. When you're people don't understand, the police officers are taking a beating right now, and it's not really right. And I am very passionate about that, because some of the finest men and women I've ever met have served in law enforcement in cities, counties, states, and even some of our federal bureaus. Not everybody's crooked,
right,
but you really understand what it means to be a cop with this scenario. You imagine that you stop a car at 2 a.m. and your thought process is this: am I going to die? Is this person armed? Are they going to shoot me? Who are they? I can't stereotype whether they be male or female, black, white, yellow, red, or green. It doesn't matter. Everybody's a danger because I have to treat them that way. It's my responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and so based upon that, you kind of walk around this hyper cortisolemic standpoint. You know, you're always hyper vigilant. And those men and women take a beating living like that. It took me about 5 years to be able to go in a restaurant with my wife, Dr. Michelle, you know, and sit with my back to the door and without hyperventilating, because you're afraid somebody's
going to— I'm surprised you can do that at all, frankly. I can't do that. Yeah, I will never sit with my back to the door. But the other cops and, you know, former special forces people and so on that I know, that security mindedness never leaves them, right?
No, I mean, you and I have been in different places and paths crossed many times, you know, like on the Reawaken tour, for example. And I'm always watching for stuff and seeing stuff. And you can't help but be vigilant with that, because life is not a bunch of fun and games, man. It's full of evil. You know, anybody is capable of anything. Everybody is capable of everything, including myself. So it's about checks and balances and paying attention. And like you said earlier, people want to act like the world is going to turn around, but stop on that. You know, it's not. It is the way it is because of sin, right? And so we've got that there, and we have to understand that to be the light in the middle of that is going to mean there's an opposition called darkness.
And that helps define our own roles as being people of truth and light and love and transparency, but also holding the line against evil or against the child mutilators, or holding the line against criminals and violence and so on. If you're okay with it, let me ask you about the collapse of the rule of law that we're witnessing in many cities. Now, what was your role with SWAT, by the way?
Yeah, I did many things with SWAT. I started off on the entry team.
Wow.
I was the first one that was in the door carrying the shield. I did that for a number of years, and then eventually transitioned to become a sniper. And again, both positions are a lot of incredible responsibility. You know, with a sniper, you know, if you pull the trigger, somebody's going to die because you're not going to miss.
Right.
And you become that good and confident about it. So the decisions you make are going to have to be right. And as a shield guy going in first, you got to be prepared to take that shield and go right at that gun barrel, whether they're firing or not. And my job was to cram that gun barrel right back up their face, you know,
right,
with that shield, no matter what it was. And you have to have that mindset. And when I think about the rule of law, what's happened over the course of time, I'm kind of sad and shocked, Mike, because these officials who are appointed as positions as head of the FBI or whatever, as an example, and or elected officials such as DAs, those have become less about servanthood and representation and more about politics to maintain your voter block.
Yep.
When it becomes like that, you get clouded. If you get clouded, your judgment gets in error. If your judgment gets in error, you become biased. And that becomes a negative when you're talking about those positions, because biasness cannot happen. You have to go to the utmost nth degree to be unbiased in prosecutorial decisions. And even from a cop standpoint, unbiased in investigations and even arrests that you might end up having to make.
Well, right. If you're a cop and something's happening and you need to make a split decision to deploy a firearm in defense of innocent life, You don't need your mind clouded with, oh, what is the skin color of this assailant?
Right? You do not. That's very well said, because today there's a false belief out here that it's like TV, that if you shoot somebody in the leg, they just go down in a heap. That's not true. I've seen people right. shot right through the heart, and they keep on fighting back and firing, and they can kill you. We are taught, all law enforcement officers, if you deploy deadly force, you're taught to kill that threat. And that's the way it is. You have to make a decision right there in the split second that may be right, may be wrong, maybe someone would do a different decision, but that's based upon your perception at that time. And for having the Monday morning quarterbacks come at that with the vengeance that they are is not okay. And I've said to people before regarding the judgment of law enforcement that if they haven't worn the badge, carried a bulletproof vest, and carried a gun, then their opinion is irrelevant to me. They mm-hmm. don't have a valid opinion because they've never done that before.
Yeah, absolutely. And cops are handicapped by politicians that are defunding them and giving them severe restrictions on rules of engagement, to the point where in a lot of these liberal cities, I know you're well aware of this, such as Seattle, Portland, you know, San Francisco, cops are neutered. They're not even allowed to do their jobs. And I can't imagine what it would be like to even try to be a cop in a city like that.
Well, it's interesting, you know, prior to my retirement and then transition to another career, being a naturopath, I was in charge and assigned at the academy. And part of my duties was in charge of recruiting. And I saw the decline of number of applicants go that direction as the decline of respect went. You know, as a little kid, you know, we're all taught to look up to police and fire. And now some kids are taught to fear the police, and that's not okay. The very people that are wanting to defund the cops will call the cops when they have a problem. And the irony of that is comical. And so you can see that it really goes down to an attack on authority, Mike. And I think it's a societal problem. You know, the family authority goes down, you know, the kids begin to run the show, and what little Johnny wants is what guides the family decisions. And then, you know, you disrespect parents, you disrespect authority, you're going to disrespect the cops. That's just the way it is. It's a natural progression. The analysis I've seen in these liberal cities is when they do defund the cops, they actually get worse crime. And we see the decay of the society increase. And so, you know, you kind of get what you pay for. You get what you appreciate. You get what you don't appreciate in those scenarios.
Well, exactly. And my last question on the cop chapter of your life, and then we'll move on to some other things. But my last question is, can you help educate people about how quickly some of these cities would turn into anarchy without a police presence? Because, you know, I've trained with cops, I've ridden with cops, I've actually trained some cops on different skill sets in the past as well, edge weapons, things like that. And the average person has no idea. They think cops are unnecessary. But if you take them away, what happens?
When you take them away, you're going to have a Portland, Oregon. I think we go back to that real life example. You're going to have chaos and anarchy. We citizens that don't have an idea of what cops do have no idea how to protect ourselves if something goes awry. It is so silly to think about taking police presence out of a city, because we know what happens when you take authority out. Lack of authority comes in. Like when you remove God from schools, ungodliness comes in. It's just a general principle. And I think people need to understand that. And obviously, I think lessons are learned from these cities, and hopefully people will get the message. And cops don't need to be defunded. They need to be refunded of the time and hard times we give them. I've encouraged people, if you see a cop out there, don't let them buy a meal. Tell them thank you. And you're going to see them light up, because I never once got called on a 911 call to come have coffee or come have dinner and say thank you. It's always the worst case scenario yeah. in every situation.
Yeah, exactly. And let's kind of use that. Let's segue to some culture topics, because in these same cities where they are defunding police and they're also releasing a lot of violent criminals onto the streets, so the DAs refuse to carry through a lot of prosecutions of violent criminals. So it's the worst of both worlds. And then there's, of course, gun control in those cities. So the message to innocent civilians is, oh, you're not allowed to defend yourself, and we're going to release the violent criminals, and we're not going to prosecute them and lock them up, and we're going to defund the police. So it's kind of like, good luck. You're now living in some kind of real life horror scenario. And no wonder. But go ahead. Yes, your thoughts.
When there's no rules, you have no rules. And so, unfortunately, you know, our correction system, I mean, I know it's got issues, and I know we want to see rehabilitation. Mike, that would be great, you know, if that would happen to everybody. But unless you have a heart change, unless you have a cultural change inside of you, and unless you go back to an area that is going to support that, it is hard to get, you know, the prison out of an individual or the rebelliousness out of an individual. And when you, these DAs that are elected are so hell-bent on achieving and maintaining power that they compromise the integrity of the safety of the cities and counties are supposed to be protecting. I fear for the future of this country, because when you value politics over people, profits over people, we become a society that is nothing more than exactly what we're going to get is Venezuela and or China rebirthed.
Yes. And that, yeah, we're headed down that path quite rapidly. So let's talk about naturopathy and nutrition and how that can pull people out of mental illness and its links to crime. Now, I think you are unique among a lot of people that I interview because you've been a cop and you're a naturopath. So let me start with that question, and I'll just kind of restate it so I'm clear about it. But you know there's a link between mental illness and criminal behavior. And mental illness can be caused, in some cases, by, you know, chronic exposure, heavy metals poisoning, or sometimes nutritional deficiencies that are allowed to fester. So in your view as a naturopath, what is the role of nutrition in society of helping people be more balanced and reducing, you know, chaos and anarchy?
The decay in the mental health of our society is correlated to the decay in our gut health. Our decay in the gut health is correlated to the standard American diet, which was driven heavily in a forward direction by the food pyramid. Same time in history, you had this transfer of the vaccine liability to the government. You had this great induction of more vaccines that were pushed on our children. So this rapid increase of inflammation created these scenarios that led to leaky gut. Leaky gut leads to leaky brain. And our gut is producing, as you well know, valuable neurotransmitters called serotonin and dopamine, which are formed by amino acids. But they can't be formed appropriately if we don't have good gut health to assimilate and absorb these nutrients on a cellular level. When I look at children today and the whole idea of mental illness, I mean, how many kids are diagnosed with ADD or ADHD because they don't produce enough dopamine because of nutritional imbalances that are created, supported, and funded in our schools?
Yep, that's
so
right.
So we're living in a society today that is actually creating this idea of this, I'm going to use my air quotes here, faux mental illness diagnosis that becomes an excuse for behavior. We are not born with medication deficiencies. We get created nutritional deficiencies by what we do or don't do. And unfortunately, no one's going through that process. As a naturopath looking at society, the just intimate link between a lack of nutrition, a lack of support for nutrition as it relates to mental illness, and the proactive push towards drugs as a first-line therapy, it's going to continue to perpetuate into more and more violent acts into our society because we're not dealing with the true root causes of the scenario inside the human body that's created the imbalances or the lack of these necessary produced neurotransmitters.
Yeah, you're nailing it. If we could reform school lunches and actually feed kids healthier items that they also enjoy, right? It's got to be something they're willing to eat, but you can have more nutritious options that are still in the form of, let's say, like a chicken nugget or a hamburger or something. You can still make those more nutritious for kids. And it's still fun.
You can.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just like salad greens all day long that they're not going to eat. But it's the food in the schools. It's also food in the prison systems, by the way, which is not nutritious. And it just exacerbates, I think, a lot of the mental illness that people struggle with. But then the mass medication of kids. So let me ask you, Mark, what do you think is the link between the psychiatric drugging and school shootings?
I think there's a great link, Mike, because, you know, as you would assume, I've been trained in mass school shooting response, and I know that really well, how to go after a threat and how to go in a door and how to make those entries that are just kind of one way in and no way out, right?
Well, we hope you would come to Uvalde, Texas, and teach those folks how to do that, because they forgot all those skills.
Now, that was a mess. I commented on that numerous times in different broadcasts, and the delay there definitely cost lives, and it was inexcusable. Cops know this too. You go in there, and we all know that if you take one, you go down, everybody else goes right over the top of you and keeps going forward till that neutralizes of the shooter. It happens, right?
Right.
But in today's world, these people that are committing these atrocious, heinous crimes, cowardice crimes, they have inside of them a lot of anxiety and hatred that is really suicidal behavior turned homicidal.
Right.
But what creates the imbalance inside of them? There are several things. Obviously, when the body itself is not in a state of homeostasis, it's not at peace, there's going to be anxiety. And that anxiety rolls up in multiple forms inside of a person. You go back to the idea of this believing that I'm a girl or a boy or a cat or whatever. That is not true. And the DNA inside of our nucleus will prove that that's not true. And no matter how much you think it, no matter how much hormones you come on, or no matter how many irresponsible practitioners or counselors tell you that, it still doesn't change your DNA. And anytime you do something against that, it creates this imbalance, which creates what I call internal anger. And that will always erupt into something else. And then you see the glorification of these shooters. They want to go down, Mike, with the blaze of glory. They want to get known. A person that does not produce dopamine, we know, classic ADD, they can't pay attention. They're lacking attention. But moreover, a person does not feel rewarded or feel valued. They don't feel heard. They don't feel listened to.
Right.
And because of that, they want to go out there and do what they've been told and what they've seen is going to make them known. And you couple that with the violence that's on television, the violence that's at the tips of our fingers in video games, glorifying homicidal acts and gamifying that, you know, shooting people in the head and watching blood go away.
Gee.
Mike, this has created a scenario where we've devalued life. We've devalued humanity. And this is a result of societal issues. You can say to people, well, let's just take away the guns. Let's legislate something. But you cannot legislate morality into a person or society, nor can you legislate out of a human being homicidal tendencies or anger. It doesn't work. So
right.
We've got to do a complete societal turnover in this, and which would include, you know, cops, you know, culture coming together, clergy coming together, et cetera.
I agree with you, but it seems like, of course, society is moving in the opposite direction with the whole transgenderism push. So, and again, you're probably uniquely qualified to comment on this, but think about what a biological young woman goes through if she is put on male hormones. She has her breasts surgically removed, so she is maimed and scarred through gender affirmation surgery. She's put on these hormones, and she begins to experience for the first time in her life impulses of being a male, which can, you're a man, I'm a man. We know such impulses can be strong, especially when you're young, very strong. And if you haven't grown up with that, you may not know how to cope exactly with that. And we saw in Nashville, of course, that transgender mass shooter, a biological female attempting to become a male and carrying out a mass shooting with, I think, a Kel-Tec sub 2009 millimeter, by the way, which is not my favorite pistol, by the way, but whatever, that's beside the point. It's not even that good of a gun, but she managed to kill some innocent people. But aren't the artificial hormones and the cultural programming, isn't this a factor that's driving some people to the point where they snap?
Well, it certainly is, because, you know, going back to this, you know, the cell, I mean, cellular biology, you know, you've got your double helix structure in the DNA, which in your DNA inside of your nucleus, which determines the sex. And then you've got, interestingly enough, the mitochondria has the DNA just the mom, and you can't change that. So you bring in to a female an enormous amount of testosterone, for example, in a system that was never designed to have that volume of testosterone. So it's contrary to biological function. It's contrary to physiology. And by default, it's going to create a sense of pathology, which is exactly what this is. So they're going to have these urges and desires that are not normal. The body doesn't know how to respond, and a person's going to respond with chaos internally, and they're going to get, you know, suicidal and homicidal. And there's not a person that I've ever met that has, and I haven't met all of them, but that has gone down those pathways that has ever been happy about life. Wow. They've all had some kind of confusing view of life and tried to cover it up by acting like everything's okay, but their life's a wreck. And I'm afraid that we're going to see that continue to happen in a greater frequency. And Mike, that is not healthcare. No, that is freakish, inappropriate gender mutilation. That's not healthcare at all.
Yeah, well said. That is gender mutilation. And some states are working on legislation, or I believe in a couple states it's been passed, to outlaw such procedures on children. But then there are other states like, of course, you know, Oregon, Washington, California, and so on, that not only welcome that, but in California, there's a new law, forgot the number, that's being proposed that would allow the state to take the children away from parents if the parents refuse to acknowledge the gender confusion of the child. So your child comes home from school and says, "Hey, mommy, I want to be a girl." And the parents say, "No way, that's crazy. You're a boy. We don't want you to be mutilated." The child can call the state, and the state can have the parents arrested. And can you imagine? I mean, again, you're a former cop. Yeah. Can you imagine police being required to respond to that scene and take children away from parents just to have those children mutilated? I mean, comment on that. That's bonkers.
Yeah, I think that in those scenarios like that, you know, I encourage people to do a couple things. Number one, move out of California.
Yeah.
Because anytime the government gets involved in your parenting education business, that is inappropriate. It's constitutionally inappropriate too, by the way. The police officers that are following ungodly, immoral rules, I just want to make sure that people understand this. They have a choice. And I suspect, and I really believe this, you're going to see police officers completely bail and retire from those places because they're not going to do that. Because a police officer has a special call that's about service and protection, not about harassment and ungodly and immoral acts like that. Now, you're going to have bad apples, of course, that can become brainwashed, but you're going to have police officers out of there. I would not follow those rules. I would leave that department in a heartbeat, and I would advise anybody else to do the same thing. Because ultimately, those type of acts, now that goes back to the 10th Amendment, doesn't it? I suppose California can do that because they can create their own rules based upon our Constitution. But I hope the people of California that are actually people will find a new state to move to, and we can have that division. And on the comment of the children, I believe this all in my heart. No child at all should have the opportunity to do that under any circumstances. It should be always outlawed. Now, you get to be an adult, do what you want. Can't stop that. Can't stop you from walking in front of a bus. That's your choice. But ultimately, a child needs to become a child by a parent teaching them how to be a good adult. And that's what it boils down to. It has nothing to do with gender. It has everything to do with learning how to be a good adult and make good decisions. And you're going to see these children regret this thing. And you see many reports of that right now. You know, I did this, I regret it now. And that's probably a sign of things to come.
Yeah, and it's a quagmire of legal issues. I know you're aware of this, but the fact that children can be easily brainwashed through social pressure and school teachers who are themselves, I believe, demonically possessed entities who are trying to sacrifice children. And then those children might appear to consent, but can they actually consent if they're not 18? And, you know, we have a juvenile system of punishment that says you shouldn't throw children behind bars with hard time because they didn't know what they were doing. And yet in states like California, that same state will say, but we can slice off the genitals of these children because they consented. So that makes no sense.
No. And you go back to this idea when you degrade the idea of God made men and women. That's it. You know, he didn't create Adam and Steve. He created Adam and Eve, right? And so the bottom line is when you degrade, disrupt, turn your back on, and disrespect that idea, what you're going to have left over is perversion. And that perversion is unlimited with what mankind can come up with. You're right. A child cannot consent. And frankly, with the immature juvenile thought processes we have going on today, a lot of our politicians shouldn't be consenting either because they're not thinking through it at all.
Right.
But unfortunately, this is the society we live in. The best thing that I can tell parents today is keep a communication line open with your child. Become involved. Ask them questions. Be good listeners. Pay attention and observe everything. And if that school, and you mentioned it correctly with these teachers, a lot of them are taught in diversity, equity, and inclusion. These higher education institutions are funded by big government. Don't forget that at all. And because of that, they're trained in these DEI philosophies that are going to say, well, you can believe anything you want. It's okay. I saw an interesting, it was a video of an adult that went to a school board meeting dressed as a cat. The adult right. was in a cat suit and was addressing the PTA and was very serious about how ridiculous she thought that they were looking at her and probably forming judgments about her. But she made the point that it's ridiculous for an adult to do that. Why is it not even more ridiculous for a child to even have the opportunity to do that?
Yeah.
And so the irony of where we are, we're doing everything we can on the liberal side to bend the rules, to create loyal followers, to Mike, enslave them. When you become dependent upon the government to do your battle and do your bidding and supply your needs, you become enslavement, just like the top of our conversation. Even that is going to lead into this dictatorial society.
Right. And in that dictatorial society, which I think you nailed that description, it's only going to result in more conflict and violence. In fact, here's a scenario. Let me run this past you with your SWAT background. So here's a scenario. Let's say a parent's living in Arizona. Their child crosses the border into California, declares themselves to be trans. The new California law kicks in, effectively medically kidnaps the child, does not allow the parents to take the child back. Law enforcement might actually be involved in detaining the parents or even escorting them back to the border. The child goes into the hospital to have their genitals mutilated. Then the parents, here's the what if, the parents hire former special forces operators to run an extraction op on their child, which morally is understandable in a sense, right? So you're going to have, let's say, some wealthy parents. Here's $100,000 each, a couple of spec ops, retired guys who are still very capable to go in and extract this child out of a medical kidnapping scenario and bring that child back across the border to Arizona. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And here's the scenario
we got to look at. And this is from the law enforcement standpoint of all the legalities we have here. If I'm a parent, got the funds, I'm going to do that too. So that's going to happen. So the child gets extracted from California, gets transported covertly back to Arizona. They get there. Now, here's what's got to happen at that point. The county and the state in which this person resides in Arizona and the county, they have to secure their borders as well.
Right.
Because you have now a dispute between states potentially, which now you're going to get into the federal level. The disputes between states was supposed to be handled by the judiciary in the branch of the federal government. So that would be a case that would go up that far to the federal government, to Supreme Court most likely, because now you've got a dispute about which state is right, which state is wrong.
Right, and, right. California will say the parents are kidnapping the child, but the parents will say, no, California kidnapped the child.
That's right. And it's going to go back and forth, and that's going to be one of those Supreme Court cases that would get heard eventually.
Yeah, and you know, God forbid, what if there's a firefight in the hospital, right? And innocent cops are on the scene, and you know how things can go very badly, very quickly in those scenarios.
I do, and you know, I go back to the idea of in that very scenario, ideally, you know, you'd have the special ops guys have some sources within California that call them and say, hey, man, we're coming in to get this child, and you would be able to tell the sheriff, you know, and the sheriff, if they were doing their job, the sheriff wouldn't allow that to occur in there anyway, but that's another side note.
Yeah.
But they would go in there and do it, and there wouldn't be any violence. But on the flip side, if they didn't tell anybody, the hospital called security, you could have a firefight that's absolutely innocent on the part of the local police officers.
Exactly.
And the special op guys. And so, boy, that opens up a whole can of worms. It sounds like you need to write a script for a movie or something.
Yeah,
Mike.
Well, there are scripts based on my podcast, that's for sure, that are out there. But I mean, think about it. If your child were kidnapped by the government of Mexico, wouldn't you try to rescue your child out of Mexico or any other country? Well, what if they're kidnapped by California?
Oh, I know guys personally that have, and obviously their names have to remain silent, but I know guys personally that have multiple teams that go down to Mexico and extract people from sex trafficking rings.
Yes,
and bring them
yes.
back. Well, that's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's son. They bring them back. So that happens. And this is going to be something that we need to start dealing with, because the more we progress into this divisiveness that we have, you're going to see the divisiveness between the states. The states get disputed. Now, actually, and I want to tell people this, to see the states stand up for states' right again would be a good thing, even if there was disputes like this that occurred, because the lack of standing up from the states, the lack of standing up from the counties within the states has created the very scenario we've got right now.
Well, but yeah, I understand what your argument, 10th Amendment. I completely agree with you. The states need to assert their rights against the federal government. But in this case, we're talking about a state asserting its dominion over a child, right?
Yeah.
So that's
unacceptable.
Right. And then you have to get to due process, you know, the 14th Amendment and things like that. Has the child even been allowed due process before being irreversibly mutilated? But this is a fascinating discussion. And again, I appreciate you entertaining this controversial topic, but we need to be thinking about this, because this is going to happen. But there are so many other issues as well that intersect law enforcement with nutrition. So for example, cannabinoids, right? Non-THC, non-psychoactive CBDs. I have a family member that takes CBDA to treat seizures, and it's very effective. And I've taken CBDs. I don't use THC. I don't use, you know, marijuana, but I've taken CBDs before. And there's an issue that hasn't been resolved. And also on gun rights, the ATF says if you've ever used cannabis, you can't own a gun now.
Yeah, that, you know, when I was a younger officer, when the marijuana issue became really was pretty new, there was a guy I worked with that his daughter had epilepsy, you know, and some big seizures that were very frequent. Found out that some of the cannabinoids would work very well.
They do.
Couldn't get that.
Yep.
At the time. Actually moved his whole family to Colorado, where he still works today, and the daughter's doing amazing. Now, that's a story. But you go back and look at history, you know, and some of our founding fathers would actually farm hemp. And it's beyond me, Mike, to look at even the THC. It's got one patent out there that I understand that I've actually read, there may be more, but says it can be used. It has a use for chronic pain and the event of a terminal illness or something of that nature,
yes.
Right? And so having said all that, I can't find in literature any negative to some of the CBDs, the non-psychoactive, non-THC in volume ones. And they ought to be able to be used all the time. And for the federal government to get involved in that and make it at one time kind of this quasi-Schedule One drug, it doesn't line up. It doesn't fit the criteria. And I think that we're heading the right direction on that one, but we're nowhere near where we need to go, especially even with the idea of firearms, for sure.
Well, right. And look at the contrast where if you want to use non-psychoactive CBD cannabinoids, the federal government says you might be a felon. But then in cities like New York, they have a vending machine giving out crack pipes. And, right? And in Seattle, I think they will just give you heroin or methadone or maybe both. And here's a place to shoot up and do your drugs. You know, it's crazy. It's the double standard is untenable.
Yeah. And the funny thing about, you know, some of the cannabinoids, I mean, they've been around since the beginning of time. I think you go back and look at Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, probably yes. Used to be in people's medicine cabinets way back when, you know, and it's not anymore, unfortunately. And we need to sort of delineate between like the heroines, the methadones, the crack cocaine, and then the plant-based cannabinoids. They're different things, obviously, and different usages. And for whatever reason, our country has got into the mess it's got into because we've over-prosecuted and we've under-prosecuted. And now we've got this dichotomy about what's too much, what's not enough. And you mentioned New York, you know, you mentioned Seattle. What a gross example of under-prosecution.
Yeah, exactly. And hence the need for the DA to have discretion, but no also doubt. Common sense, right? You can always make the decision of who to prosecute or who not to prosecute, but those decisions need to be made by a person who is rooted in the values of the local culture.
That's right. And when you think about discretion, I mean, this is a big deal. Discretion has got to be, every person has got to be looked at individually. You can't blanket statement a whole thing. And that's been a problem. We blanket statement so many things. And so you look at a situation and, okay, you can say a person, you know, made a mistake. It's a one-time deal. And you believe that, you check them out, you vet them, cut them a break, you know. But if it's a repeat offender that's created violence because of and through that, there's no more breaks.
Yeah.
That's about discretion. And discretion has to be done in an unbiased, unclouded manner. Back to the top of the conversation, when you're trying to hold a position while trying to hold votes, everything is biased at that point. So your discretion really is clouded and shrouded at that point. You can't do that. We need to get leaders back that will do that once again. And that would help us a long way to restoring what we should have in our country.
Well said. And by the way, in the few minutes we have left here, let me just plug your website again. Sherwood.tv is the website. And I want to ask you kind of what you cover on your shows and so on. But also just to let you know, Mark, you know, you're welcome to come here and join me in studio sometime if you're ever in the Central Texas area. I know Tulsa's not that far away. If you ever get down this way, let us know in advance. Have you in studio. It'd be a fun time.
I mean, that would be we'd have a great conversation. I've enjoyed this very much.
Oh, me too. Me too. Absolutely. And, but for wrapping things up today, tell us about your show and what else you cover. What's your focus on your public education efforts?
Yeah, we just try to give people, we address topics, articles that talk about health and talk about culture. And we just dive into it, my wife and I, on our shows and all of our broadcasts. And we're trying to give people a balanced perspective, Mike. And I want to give people a roadway to being able to walk healed and walk healthy. And that requires information in the areas of emotional health, physical health, spiritual health, governmental health, and even financial health. And so if you can get a person really actively and intentionally doing something positive in those areas on a daily basis, life's not going to get any more easier, but you will get more resilient in dealing with the challenges of life. And some of that resistance will actually make you stronger.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know you're very practical in the way you present information too, because you like to on-ramp people in a way that's easy for them. And I'm right there with you. You know, I used to be more hardcore about it, but now I'm like, hey, if you want to go out and enjoy a barbecue brisket sandwich, go for it, but take some vitamin C, right? Or have a fresh orange, eat some raw cabbage coleslaw with it so that your body can deal with, you know, the burnt portions of the animal fat that frankly maybe aren't that great for you, but you know, you got to live too. I mean, I'll have barbecue brisket every once in a while myself, but I'm slamming vitamin C with it. So it's all good.
Yeah, man, life is going to be challenging. You got to learn to manage it and figure out your road. I mean, like for me, doing what we do, you won't see me eating brisket because people would point a finger at me and take a picture and put it all over social media.
But you can eat it in secret, Mark.
I got you, right? But just a sandwich is not going to kill you. But if that's what you're bombarding your system with, that non-food, anti-food, Franken-food, I call it, right?
Right.
You're going to crush your system, and it's going to become non-resilient, immunocompromised. And that's more or less where people are today. And I just encourage people to start doing more of the right things. Like you talked about, the vitamin C and orange and some fruit, slaw. And start doing less of the wrong things. And the starting line on that is just awareness, like we're doing here.
Right, exactly. No, I'm glad you made that point, because I might eat a barbecue brisket sandwich like 2 or 3 times a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's not lunch every day, but it's usually when I'm out with other people, by the way. Right. So, you know, I'm with a group and they want to enjoy some Texas barbecue. Like, okay, we do it. But I tell you what, Mark, invitation, you come down here, we'll have a secret brisket sandwich off camera. How about that?
Off camera, no cell phones.
Off camera.
I'm in.
And I'll bring a smoothie. I'll tell you what, I'll bring a fruit smoothie with blueberries and everything to counteract anything in the brisket that might be undesirable. But we'll load up with some nutrients, but we're going to have a sandwich together. How about that?
That sounds like a deal, man. You got it.
All right. See, there's the balance, folks, right there. So it's Dr. Mark Sherwood, and the website is sherwood.tv. And Mark, you're welcome here anytime. It's great to meet you today. Really appreciate all your thoughts on this.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the conversation. Thanks for going down those hard pathways. And a good conversation. I hope it gives some people some balanced perspective.
I think it will. And it's just a reminder to stay healthy, everybody. A healthy diet, healthy body makes for a sound mind. And you need a sound mind in today's environment of so much insanity out there. And we need to help our children stay sane, as all the assaults on their minds are just unimaginable. But thank you, Dr. Sherwood. Great to have you on today. And stay tuned out. Don't hang up. I want to mention something off camera, but it's been great to talk with you. And
for sure,
for those of you watching, this is Mike Adams here, of course, Brighteon.com and Brighteon.tv. And we built this platform so we can have free speech conversations just like this. So thank you for your support. And as always, you can repost this interview on other channels and other platforms as you wish. And you can even eat a secret brisket sandwich should you desire to do so. Just have some nutrition with it. Thanks for watching today. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care.